evening, everybody, and thanks for joining me here again on the Positude Podcast. I am your host, Maggie Hart, looking forward to spending another hour with you this week, spreading positivity, hopefully teaching you some things, and just spending an hour relaxing and enjoying each other's company, and spreading the love, spreading the positivity. I still haven't gotten back into my original format. At some point, maybe we'll share some recipes and talk about current events, but not today. Today, I want to go into some more of the book that we started last week, Codependent No More by Melody Beatty, talk about some things contained within that. I want to share some simple abundance, comfort, and joy information with you that'll help, hopefully, for you to lift you up, to help you get through your day, and just share some examples of how we can keep in that mindset of abundance and joy and gratefulness and thankfulness. And I wanted to start out tonight by talking a little bit about something that I've been praying and meditating on for a really long time. And about 6 months ago, I've just been doing this inner spiritual journey myself to discover some of the things that have been kind of outside of my grasp as far as knowledge. Everybody is a work in progress, and learning and growing is what makes us who we are. And the ability, or rather the desire, to learn and grow and educate ourselves is what keeps us going and helps to propel us toward those higher levels that we aspire to. If we don't continue our searches for knowledge and we don't continue to learn and grow, the stagnancy that arises there not only keeps us or puts us in a state of despair at times, because when we get into that stagnant pool, when we get into that quicksand feeling where it doesn't seem as though the flow is there and everything seems just so hard, and we don't have that capability to escape, and I use this word last night in conversation, but to escape drudgery, and we get embedded in that quagmire and that feeling of heaviness and that feeling that nothing's going our way and everything's wrong and it's not happening fast enough and it's not happening smoothly enough, and you know, just all of those negative feelings. We need to continue to negate that negativity, shift the mindset, get ourselves conditioned into that feeling of thankfulness, gratefulness, and joy, no matter what we're dealing with. And as I've spoken about so many times before on my shows, finding gratitude and beauty in the little things truly is a great way to retrain your mind to get to where you want to be. And just a simple flower, the sun shining on your face. And I know that I sound repetitive in these shows when I keep kind of hammering that home, but it is essential. And as much as we say we find gratitude in simple things, we find abundance and we're thankful, if we don't maintain that mindset throughout that day and that energetic vibration throughout the day, then it's not going to work for you. And I'm sorry if I sound like a broken record, but it seems as though, as much as some of us want to be there and want to have that, we're not able to maintain it. So when we continue to strive to learn, to grow, and we have that prayerful mindset, that meditative mindset, and we ask for the answers to come to us, they will be given to us. And so on my own personal spiritual journey, as I started to say earlier, these 6 months, I've been asking to find answers to things that I felt were like, I have this concept in my mind, but I was looking for affirmation, as it were, from a written source, or something that I heard on maybe a video or something like that, that kind of gave me more substance to be able to use what I'm feeling inside to grab onto that, to formulate more opinions and gather more knowledge. And I know that that kind of sounds broad spectrum, but essentially, let me lay it out for you. I've known, and we've talked about how the Bible has changed, well, the Bible has been changed, rather, and things have been omitted. But I've been searching and struggling to find different sources of information that would further me along in the journey to find that missing knowledge other than what comes to me intuitively in prayer and meditation. Because I get things on the daily about, you know, these little epiphanies, let's call them. Let me give you an example. Yesterday, or day before yesterday, I was praying and meditating on something, and I found a source, and I started to read it, and I literally got chills. And in the course of reading that material, I got chills, really hard chills. And in that instant, my mind kind of stopped, and I saw that mini movie that has happened to me as long as I can remember. And in the course of that mini movie, I was shown 15 or 16 different scenarios in a quick snapshot kind of progression. It was like picture vision, picture vision, picture vision, picture vision, 15 or 16 times of different instances and thoughts that I had and experiences that I had and stuff that I had listened to or read that all were congruent with the information that I was researching at that time. So that to me was not just an affirmation. It wasn't just one or two things. It was 15 or 16 things in rapid succession that were shown to me in my mind. And that was just huge to me because I was like, okay. So when I get a glimpse or a glimmer or a small affirmation, it's always a great thing. But to get that many in rapid succession in the space of like 30 seconds a minute, all congruent with what I was listening to, that was just, it was huge. It was huge. And I'm like, okay, so I definitely know I'm on the right path here. I mean, there's no question that I'm following the route that I need to be taking on my journey to learn more about this subject. So let me go into further detail. I have always had the suspicion, the feeling that Jesus was an Essene. And it stands to reason because there were two groups at play at the time that we know weren't good and were against Jesus' teachings and Jesus in general, the Pharisees and the Sadducees, right? So, but there was another group at the time that maybe wasn't as prevalent but did exist, the Essenes. It seems to be the trend in the underground media in the spiritual sector that lately everybody's doing shows about Jesus having been an Essene. And there's one guy that's become quite famous, and that's his platform. He talks about how Jesus was an Essene and the Essene Gospels. And while I personally believe that he skewers some of the information, I don't find it to be 100% accurate, at least in his interpretation of it or the way that he relays it to the people. There is absolutely some definitive stuff there that does align. Jesus's words in the Bible do align very much with the Essene values. And so, and he actually does give scriptural references that Jesus said that directly concur with the Essene guidelines. And so that's wonderful because that does further lend credence to my thoughts all along, and that's what I would consider an affirmation. But I feel like this guy kind of embellishes a little bit and puts his spin on it, which that's his right. I just choose not to believe all of what he's talking about. I do see some evidence there, and it supports my feelings. So that's cool that Jesus was an Essene, or at least studied with the Essenes. So John the Baptist lived in nature. He was probably an Essene. There are many consistencies in actually going through and reading the Essene Gospel that further, you know, lend credence to what I've thought all along. And that's the book that I was actually reading. It's the Essene Gospels, and listening to on YouTube. I've got a copy of the whole four Gospels coming, but I was reading some chapters of it and listening to some YouTube chapters on it as well. And Edmond Bordeaux Szelkely, I'm not sure how to say that, the guy that ostensibly got a copy of this Essene Bible from the Vatican, and supposedly there were only two copies that existed. The Vatican had one, and the Habsburgs had another. I mean, how this guy got in there, got to the Vatican, got this copy, and then translated and published it is a mystery, and it does, you know, put a question mark in your head. Is this real? Did he really get this? Of course, the Vatican denies that. However, as a what I've been called so many times a conspiracy theorist recognizes, is that any time that there are trolls and there are people who, if you're onto something viable and you're onto something true, they try and discredit you, call you crazy, pretend that it never existed, deny its existence, things like that. So that makes sense to me too. I mean, if this guy found it and printed it and published it, you know, it's very possible that the evil powers that be would do their best to discredit him and to mock him and to make him seem crazy and say that there's no substance. And when you Wikipedia the guy, of course, that's the strain there, is that, you know, he was a phony and he was a fraud and all of that, which it's Wikipedia, so what does that tell you, right? So also biblical scholars have denied the validity of the Essene Gospels. So, and there are different sects of Christianity that believe different things as well. We know that, and it again depends on your interpretation and what your thought processes are. However, as I started to go through the first chapter and I'm listening to what were supposedly Jesus's words to the disciples about specifically the parasites in a body, I literally got chills for two reasons. Number one, the way that he tells the disciples to clear these parasites from the body is just very disgusting and gross in content. And I don't typically have a weak stomach, but just the thought of pulling parasites out of the body, and he gives an example of one of the disciples that's not getting better, and he goes and tells the guy how to get the parasite out of the body, and then Jesus actually pulls it out of the body and smashes its head with two stones and says, this is Satan, this is what was in you, and now Satan is dead and can't, you know, inhabit anybody else. Well, I'm pretty sure that it's metaphorical in content. He doesn't actually mean that he killed the actual Satan from this one guy's body, but possibly a demon or the energy of Satan. And I just, this was part of what I've been searching for, because with the jab, we've been told that there is luciferase rather in the jab. And I've been doing a lot of research as to the morticians that are pulling what are being called by the mainstream media or the mainstream doctors that are on the vaccination bandwagon to be blood clots. What my research has shown me is that there are morticians out there that claim that these are not blood clots. They are sentient creatures that they take out of the body and are actually living in jars. And in the instance of graphene oxide being placed into the jab, that the graphene oxide formulates these chains inside the body. And that whole pathway, that's basically what I've been trying to get more in prayer and meditation of, and define affirmation on my theory, because I've always had the knowing, the feeling and the knowing that there were evil things placed into, not maybe all of them, but some of these jabs, some of the formulations of the jabs, that not only are, for instance, the graphene oxide, which would be something that the 5G towers would affect in the body, but also the organisms that have been placed potentially in the body as a result of these jabs. And furthermore, the research that has been cropping up most recently about how so many diseases, even cancer, could potentially be a result of parasites in the body. And that's another thing that I've noticed an uptick in popularity of videos on, and people becoming famous on ways to cleanse and purify and detoxify the body of parasites and organisms. And there, people are making practices of and becoming virally famous for different classes and one-on-ones and courses that they offer and treatments that they offer that eradicate or help to eradicate parasites from the body, and then further prevent us from getting more parasites. And a lot of it is supposedly coming from the foods that we eat and the things that are being sprayed on the foods that we eat, the GMOs that are being placed in the foods that we eat, and the unclean foods, the way that the foods are provided to us, where they come from, where they're sourced, how the animals were grown and the fish were grown, and the organisms and parasites that exist as a result of our, what we're imbibing into our bodies, the animals and the fish, as a result of, you know, that just being grown in dirty circumstances and conditions. And then I take it a whole step farther as far as the energetic essence of the animals that were ingested, and the way that they're sourced, the way that they're grown, and the way that they're harvested. It's all kind of this big giant pool of wax that I've been researching and just trying to gain knowledge on, because all of this has been resonating with me for quite some time. The fact that there's so much toxicity in our foods, in the air, in all of it, and it's definitely got an evil source, in my opinion, because it stands to reason. Like, I raise chickens, for example, and turkeys, and my chickens and my turkeys are not always free range, but they're free range a lot of the time in the warm weather. At least they're able to take a jaunt once or twice a day in free range, and they're just very happy creatures. They're very secure for the most part, unless there's a predator around and one or, you know, a bunch of them gets offed by a predator, and then they become all nervous and antsy for a couple of weeks after that. As a general rule, my girls are happy. They all have names. I play with them. I talk to them. When they get fed, you know, they're interacted with. And essentially, they follow you around their coop, their fenced-in area outside their home, like the Pied Piper of Hamelin. They're incredibly cute, in my opinion. They all have their own personalities. They're curious. They're friendly. They're just happy. And because they're happy, they're great layers. And, you know, if they were in a farm where thousands of them were raised, you see these awful videos of these horrendous conditions that these animals are raised in to be slaughtered for human consumption. Because I look at most things or all things from an energetic source, I feel that not just the way that they were raised and the conditions in which they're raised, that we're purchasing those chickens en masse at the grocery store, they're dirty, right? They're being raised in dirty conditions and unhealthy conditions. But also the energetic essence of the animal as it's raised that way, I feel, is dirty and unclean, because they're not raised in a happy environment. They're raised in a negative energy environment. They're not happy creatures when they're raised. They're raised in just horrible, awful conditions that, you know, I think it's just so cruel. And so that would stand to reason that that would be something that would be assimilated into their DNA and into their essence. The fact that they have no happiness, they have no joy in living. And once that gets into their DNA, it would stand to reason, at least to me, that when we eat those sources, that DNA, that negative energy, would also be infused into our system as we eat those things. And also the eggs that we eat from those chickens, if we're talking about not even eating the meat chickens, but just the eggs that they lay, that the energy, you know, from a mass-produced dirty environment where they're not happy and they don't get to live good lives before either they're slaughtered or for as long as they lay eggs, and then probably they get sent to some farm to be processed for human consumption. All of that, I feel like, energetically, we're putting that into our body, so they're having that infused into their DNA, and possibly successfully for generations after that, that's carried down, because we know that the DNA holds and contains knowledge. So if we've got, you know, fourth or fifth or sixth generations of chickens that have been raised in a really bad environment, and that's gotten into their DNA, and it carries down cyclically, generation to generation, and just the slovenly, horrible conditions they're being raised in for their actual physical life, I don't feel as though that's the energy that we really want to put into our bodies, because it would stand to reason that we're going to incorporate that energy into our systems. And if we're trying to live pure and healthily and have as pure of a DNA system ourselves, and we put that stuff into our body, it's only going to affect us negatively, if that makes sense. So yeah, my birds are happy and they lay great eggs, and people always say, you know, these are the best eggs I've ever had, and they're really good tasting. And I believe it's a result of the environment in which they're raised and the attention that's paid to them. They're treated respectfully. They're treated almost as pets. And I think that that makes a difference. Now, Sezekeli, or whatever, however you pronounce his name, in his Gospels does say, as far as I've gotten, that Jesus preached that you shouldn't eat meat at all, and that you should be a vegetarian, and he goes into his philosophy on that in the Gospels. Now, apparently there was a movie that came out not too long ago that people like 107 were supporting, and I can't think of the name of the movie, but the premise behind it is that Jesus was a vegetarian, and so as a result of that movie becoming popular, people have been buying the Essene Gospel by Sezekeli, and also another book that he did, which is anywhere between $75 and $150 on eBay and Amazon for, called The Essene Way, Biogenic Living, which is incredibly expensive. Right now on Amazon, I'm looking at a copy, used very good, $152.17, and it seems as though there's a run on those books. When I look at other used book sources to purchase it, it's either out of stock or, yeah, between $75 and $150. So people are buying this book. Supposedly this guy translated the Gospels and wrote all of these other books, in regards to Jesus in the Essenes, and because of this movie, it's just developed popularity, and it's another trending thing, long story short. So whether or not Cescoli was a vegetarian and a naturalist and decided to put his spin into the book and claim that Jesus said that we're supposed to be vegetarians, how much of the truth in the, how much of the Gospels of the scene is truth, at least his translation, I'm not sure of. But what I can tell you is when he spoke about the parasites, it definitely resonated with me because it's been something that I've been trying to grasp on for and find more material and knowledge on for a long time. And he does speak about angels in the Gospels, that supposedly there are angels of air and angels of water, and that God gave us these angels, and that if we pray for them to help us heal, and specifically in this case, he's talking about getting the parasites out of the body and the evil out of the body, the Satan out of the body, so that essentially our body, which is the temple, can be healed so that we can be closer in communion with God. And I'm thinking to be able to hear God more clearly. That resonates with me. When I read reviews of the book, The Essene Way, Biogenic Living by Cescoli, there was somebody that commented that had supposedly been doing research for like 40 years and was a holistic healer, and claims that the book isn't entirely necessary, that they gleaned more knowledge from the first book of the Gospel of the Essenes as to ways to heal holistically that would be more effective, and that essentially the book wasn't a necessity. However, the book overview for that particular one says, and I quote, "From the remote ages of antiquity, a remarkable teaching has existed, which is universal in its application and ageless in its wisdom. Fragments of it are found in Sumerian hieroglyphs and on tiles and stones dating back some 8 of 10,000 years. Some of the symbols, such as for the sun, moon, air, water, and other natural forces, are from an even earlier age preceding the cataclysm that ended the Pleistocene period. How many thousands of years previous to that the teaching existed is unknown. To study and practice this teaching is to reawaken within the heart of every man an intuitive knowledge that can solve his individual problems and the problems of the world. Traces of the teaching have appeared in almost every country and religion. Its fundamental principles were taught in ancient Persia, Egypt, India, Tibet, China, Palestine, Greece, and many other countries. But it has been transmitted in its most pure form by the Essenes, that mysterious brotherhood which lived during the last 2 or 3 centuries BC and the first century of the Christian era at the Dead Sea in Palestine and at Lake Mareotis in Egypt. In Palestine and Syria, the members of the brotherhood were known as Essenes, and in Egypt as therapeutae, or healers. From its antiquity, its persistence through the ages, it is evident the teaching could not have been the concept of any individual or any people, but it is the interpretation by a succession of great teachers of the law of the universe, the basic law, eternal and unchanging as the stars in their course, the same now as 2 or 10,000 years ago, and as applicable today as then." And that's an excerpt from the chapter, The Essenes in Their Teaching, from that book. So, I'm going to prefer to just read the Gospels. The information that is contained in those paragraphs also speaks very loudly to me, because I've just known inherently all along, and I've said this on my previous shows, that each belief structure has bits and pieces of the puzzle that I think were taken, and maybe different tribes took different pieces of information to different parts of the planet, and that became their belief system. And I think we all kind of have parts of the essential puzzle, as it were. And if we were all to come together, and I've said this so many times on my previous shows, if everybody was to come together from their different cultures and shared all of their knowledge as one and put it all together, some of the mysteries that we've been searching for all along would truly be solved. So, and this speaks to that. So therefore, I also, it further awakens my curiosity in the Essene Gospels to see what else is hidden there that's not in the Bible that could potentially not only be true, but help us further in our journey to heal, to become enlightened, to have more knowledge, as the Gospels say, as Scriptures say, to have the knowledge that Jesus had and be able to do the things that he did and more, which, again, I've said all along, there have been pieces that have been taken out and changed from the Bible to take away our power. And when I put that in conjunction with the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Essenes portion in that, it just, wow, it blows my mind. And it's something that I really am anxious and excited to explore further. And I hope that maybe you would consider doing this as well and see what you think about it. I think this would be a good time to take a musical break. The introductory and ending music for my shows, and a lot of times my break time music, is provided by my good buddy Pat Carr. You can reach him at http://www.itunes.com/Pat Carr. Pat's an amazing original artist. He's on SoundClick, Reverb Nation. He's all over the place. Please check him out, support his music, and tell him Maggie sent you. Also, we are totally listener-funded here on the network, so please consider a contribution to the network to keep us going and to allow us to bring you quality entertainment. Please check out not only the chat room, but some of the other shows on the network. Buy the owner a cup of coffee, send him a few bucks, whatever you could afford. I'm sure he'll be greatly appreciative. And also, if you want to be a true superstar and you have your own business, please consider buying some advertising time here on the network. If you don't have a commercial that's professionally produced, I'm sure that the owner and the producer would be happy to put something together for you to be able to promote your business and support our shows and our network at the same time. And it's a great way to be able to share your business information and support us and allow these shows to continue to be brought to you for your listening enjoyment every week. We'll be back right after this. You're listening to the Positude Podcast with Maggie Hart. And also, before we break, if you'd like some guidance, direction, have some problems going on, need some spiritual assistance, whatever it is that you need, I'd be happy to assist you. I do have a website that is under construction right now and hopefully will be available to you very shortly. But in the meantime, please contact me at maggie_hart@outlook.com.
The meek, turn the other cheek, live the golden rule, don't call anyone a fool, and seek ye first the kingdom of the Lord. It was a new way of teaching, no one ever taught before. Now all these things we've heard a thousand times and more. Take the time to understand, light of the world, salt of the earth, care for one another, but don't just love your brother, and don't lay up your treasures on the earth. It was a new way of teaching, no one ever taught before. Now all these heard a thousand times or more. this guy. Men of little faith, who don't have time to wait. Now don't you think he'll do the same for you?
Thank you for joining us for the second half of the Positude Podcast. I am your host, Maggie Hart. You just heard A New Way of Thinking by my good buddy, Pat Carr. So just briefly touching on the first half of the show, we were talking about the Essene Gospels and whether or not Jesus was an Essene, and then my prayer and guidance that was shown to me in regards to parasites and disease and how that relates to some information that was contained in the Essene Gospels by Seskaly's translations. So touching on that a little bit more, it stands to reason that parasites do cause a great amount of disease, if not all disease, in our body. And the fact that it was spoken of in the Gospels and way to eradicate it even back then, and the fact that that was left out of the Christian Bible, if there's credence to the fact that this gospel is true and legitimate, then that starts a whole other chain of events in my mind, because I'm thinking, okay, these people are teaching you how to live purely. Jesus supposedly teaches his disciples how to eradicate the evil from their body by way of the parasites, the evil parasites. And he does talk about praying to the angels of air, the angels of water, to help purify the body. And the process, as I mentioned earlier, is very gross in content and goes into great detail as to the smells and the creatures and all of that. And it's pretty gross. But once the disciples become pure and they also engage in a period of prayer and fasting while they're ousting these toxic creatures from their systems, and they're suffering, physically suffering, as a result of ousting these things from their systems, and it describes their physical ailments, and that also struck home with me, because when I do deliverance work and spiritual work in clearing the body spiritually, some of the same instances apply as to the physical eradication that the disciples encountered in the ousting of these creatures from their systems. And when we look at things like parasites and their physical presence, they are gross in they're just disgusting. And so that also, to me, you know, feels right. It feels like there is something nasty that shouldn't be in our body. And so to me, it feels right that there would be an evil essence to them as well. So it all kind of just fits for me, and it just, I'm going down this whole different rabbit hole, and it's so interesting to me. And the idea that to purify our bodies and our temples, to be spiritually closer to God, and the information contained in the Gospels on how to do that is extremely exciting to me, because it doesn't go against scriptures to my way of thinking, because Jesus is teaching them prayer and fasting, and he does say in the Essene Gospels, again, just like he does in our traditional scripture, you know, I told you this kind will only come out with prayer and fasting. Well, this is how you do that. Prayer and fasting, you're actually physically eradicating these physical creatures from your body, just like you would spiritually eradicate a demonic being or a demonic essence. And so it all collaborates so nicely, and it's just, I think, something that we really should be paying attention to and be studying more. Also, in conjunction with the fact that what's been reported to have been put in these jabs, on a very unclean essence, these creatures, and then also in our food sources, and how the parasites develop in our body. And I also look at water sources, like the water that we drink. Are we using Brita filters? Are we purifying the water? We know that there are bleaches and fluorides in the waters, but I have read a lot of articles and reports that say that there are parasites in the water that we're drinking from our public sources and our faucets. So why? Why is that happening? Is it another nefarious plot by the bad guys? Are they putting things other than fluoride in our water that could come into our bodies and grow in our bodies? We've heard many stories of people having parasites like tapeworm, and historically speaking, a lot of people have believed that the sources of those come from our family pets. And while that may be possible, to me it stands to reason much more realistically that they are coming from possibly our water sources or the foods that we imbibe. So it's just, there's so much there to think about, and it's all in perfect congruence to what I've been praying for, the information that I've been researching and received. It all fits together. Purifying our bodies, which is our temple, to bring us spiritually closer to Father, Universal Source, whatever your belief structure is, it all makes sense. We know that God is within us. We know that God lives in us, but he wants a pure temple. That energy, that universal energy, requires a pure temple, not only for us to be able to have the energy to perform our own sort of miracles and be able to manifest what we want, but just to be spiritually whole, to be able to get closer to that source. We need to be physically and mentally pure. It's so cool that the source is there, that I'm now exploring, and I hope that you will too. We'll talk about that more as we progress in subsequent episodes, but I did want to touch on codependency a little bit more, and we'll continue to talk about that also in future episodes, and then some positive stories to uplift you and help you keep your energy positive. We talked last week about detachment and how we can relate it to helping our spiritual growth. So I wanted to talk this week a little bit about the control factor. When we attempt to control people and things that we have no business controlling, we are controlled, says the book called Dependent No More. And I'm going to jump around a little bit. It also says, never forget that alcoholics and other troubled persons are expert controllers. We've met our match when we attempt to control them or their disease. We lose the battles. We lose the wars. We lose ourselves, our lives. Borrowing a tidbit from Al-Anon, you didn't cause it, you can't control it, and you can't cure it. So stop trying. We become utterly frustrated when we try to do the impossible. Let me just stop here and say that this segment of the book is referring to different behaviors like alcoholism. But this, in the essence of the information contained here in a general standpoint, I feel is very effective in helping people. So continuing on, I believe that clutching tightly to a person or thing or forcing my will on any given situation eliminates the possibility of my higher power doing anything constructive about that situation, the person, or me. My controlling blocks God's power. It blocks other people's ability to grow. It stops events from happening naturally. It prevents me from enjoying people or events. Control is an illusion. It doesn't work. We cannot control alcoholism, and again, this is specific to this content. We cannot control anyone's compulsive behaviors, overeating, sexual, gambling, or any of their behaviors. We cannot and have no business trying to control anyone's emotions, mind, or choices. We cannot control the outcome of events. We cannot control life. Some of us can barely control ourselves. People ultimately do what they want to do. They feel how they want to feel or how they are feeling. They think what they want to think. They do the things they believe they need to do, and they will change only when they are ready to change. It doesn't matter if they're hurting themselves. It doesn't matter that we could help them if they'd only listen to and cooperate with us. It doesn't matter, doesn't matter, doesn't matter, doesn't matter. We cannot change people. Any attempts to control them are a delusion as well as an illusion. People will either resist our efforts or redouble their efforts to prove we can't control them. They may temporarily adapt to our demands, but the moment we turn our backs, they will return to their natural state. And jumping around, the only person you can know now or ever changes yourself. The only person that it is your business to control is yourself. Detach and surrender. Sometimes we do that, the result we have been waiting and hoping for happens quickly, almost miraculously. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it never happens, but you still will benefit. You don't have to stop caring or loving. You don't have to tolerate abuse. You don't have to abandon constructive problem-solving methods such as professional intervention. You only need to put your emotional, mental, spiritual, and physical hands back in your own pockets and leave things and people alone. Let them be. Why is this important in manifesting? I'm going to bring that correlation back to the process that we want to have be effective. We can't control a situation any more than we can control the person involved in that situation. So the more that we try and push and threaten or mentally try to manipulate somebody to come around to our thought process, all of the energy that's involved in all of that and all of the mental anguish that we put ourselves through as a result of that, all of the energy that's wasted and spent in trying to control a person or a situation can be so much better used by putting that energy into working on our own issues, bettering ourselves, developing, like we talked about in the two-part shows on the ego and healing trauma, developing a healthier internal environment, healing ourselves, working on our weaknesses, and stripping away the ego, getting rid of all of the falsehoods that we thought were our persona, which really weren't. They were what the ego thought were ways to protect ourselves, and getting back to the essence of who we really are. The kind, gentle, loving, beautiful souls that we were created to be before the ego took over as a result of our personal traumas. And just like layers on an onion, we peel back all of these different ways that we handle trauma and sadness and hurt. And once we're consciously aware of how we previously handled a situation and how detrimental that was to our well-being, and we continually practice the better ways to handle a situation and energetically how to raise our vibrations and keep them at that positive, loving, thankful, joyful, grateful energy that we need to sustain in order to manifest, wow, wait and see the changes that will happen. It's just so amazing. We're all a community here, and this should be a safe spot for everybody. We're all human. We all make mistakes. We're constantly evolving, learning, and growing. And if we continue to support each other, when, for instance, we see a neighbor or a friend or a loved one that's suffering with some of these bad ego issues, if we could gently show them the right way and help to redirect them and to support them in their personal growth, that karmic energy also helps us in our own spiritual growth. So always please try and help each other out and support each other in your personal endeavors for spiritual growth. That's the essence of what Jesus taught, loving one another as you love yourselves. And from what I'm reading, that and so much more is what the Essenes taught, and possibly part of what's been hidden or taken from us out of the scriptures to prevent our personal growth. When we look overall at different cultures across the planet that have exercised and practiced purity of food, simple ways of life, stress-free living, not being caught up in the 9-to-5 rat race, but culturally, originally, back in the day, people didn't work sun up to sundown as they do today. Generally speaking, there was a time of rest, there was a time of prayer, there was a time of worship, there was family time. All of those ways have become shoved under the carpet, and we've traded that out, and we've become this slave race that we were never intended to be. And these original teaching and these old ways are really, as you've heard me say so many times before on my shows, ways that we need to practice again to get back to the basics, because they knew how to live until 103 and be healthy, and what foods work best for their body, and how to prepare those foods, and how to store those foods, and how to keep them pure. I don't remember a lot of people having allergies and all of these things back in the olden days, and it would stand to reason that if they lived their lives a certain way and practiced certain personal rituals to cleanse and purify their food and their bodies, it may be that they had less parasitical involvement at that time, and so that would have lend to the status of their health at that time, the better status of their health, which is why people very well could have lived longer. All of this ties in. It's so fascinating to me. For my positive stories today, I'd like to go back to a book that I love called Simple Abundance, A Daybook of Comfort and Joy by Sarah Bam Brechnack. And so it's a devotional, so it has a different story for every day. And one of them is called, What Is It You Truly Need? Do you have everything you need right now? What about your wants? Few of us have everything we want, and at times our wants can seem positively all-consuming. Our sensibilities become confused and overstimulated by a mass media that glorifies beautiful people and expensive objects. It's easy to lose clarity about what it is we need to live authentically. Most of us are hungering for something more in our lives, but do you really think the answer can be found in a glossy magazine or on the movie screen? Obviously, this book's dating itself a little bit, but the context is still very, very important, I feel. If we are to live happy, creative, fulfilled lives, it is crucial to distinguish between our wants and our needs. Unfortunately, many women blur the distinction and then wonder why they feel so diminished. Make peace with the knowledge that you can't have everything you want. Why? Because it's more important for us to get everything we need. Like infants, we feel contentment when our essential needs are met. Be courageous. Ask yourself, what is it I truly need to make me happy? The deeply personal answers to this vital question will be different for each of us. Trust the loving wisdom of your heart. It is only after we acknowledge our inner needs that we can harness the creative energy necessary to manifest them in our lives. This book was written for women, so please generalize when I say women. Of course, that means everybody. The woman you were meant to be. Has this ever happened to you? You're washing your face and suddenly you do not recognize the woman staring back at you. Who is this? You ask the mirror on the wall. No reply. She looks vaguely familiar but bears little resemblance to the woman you were expecting to see there. Psychologists call this phenomenon a displacement of self, and it usually occurs during times of great stress, which for many of us is an everyday occurrence. But what's wrong? What is this sadness we cannot name? Here is a question that deserves loving meditation. Perhaps the heart of our melancholy is that we miss the woman we were meant to be. We miss our authentic selves. But the good news is that even if you have ignored her overtures for decades, wear red, cut your hair, study art in Paris, learn the tango, again dating itself the book, your authentic self has not abandoned you. Instead, she has been waiting patiently for you to recognize her and reconnect. Turn away from the world this year and begin to listen. Listen to the whispers of your heart. Look within. Your silent companion has lit lanterns of love to illuminate the path to wholeness. At long last, the journey you were destined to take has begun. And then the underrated duty. Perhaps you think you'll be happy when you get a bigger kitchen or a new job or the perfect someone with whom to share your life. But don't you want to start making happiness a habit right now? Every morning when we wake up, we've been given a wonderful gift, another day of life. So let's make the most of it. No one can do this for us. Happiness is not a possession to be prized, Daphne du Maurier wrote in Rebecca. It is a quality of thought, a state of mind. Let's adopt a new state of mind about happiness. Let's stop thinking that things outside our control will bring us happiness. Admittedly, remodeling the kitchen, landing the job we've been dreaming of, or finding that special someone can make us feel, at least momentarily, happier. But the magic seeds of contentment are planted deep within us. Happiness that the world cannot take away only flourishes in the secret garden of our souls. By tending to our inner garden and uprooting the weeds of external expectations, we can nurture our authentic happiness the way we would nurture something that's beautiful and alive. Happiness is a living emotion. Your happiness is not a frivolous, expendable luxury. The pursuit of happiness is an inalienable right guaranteed by the Declaration of Independence. But we have to be willing to pursue it. Ultimately, genuine happiness can only be realized once we commit to making it a personal priority in our lives. This may be new behavior for some of us and a bit intimidating. Be gentle with yourself. It will all unfold. Today you may not be familiar with the happiness habit, but like any new behavior, happiness can be learned. From the Portable Do It book, naturally in the course of a lifetime, people tend to spend some time in each category. Looking back, however, most people can say, yes, I gave the majority of my time and attention to blank, and mention one of the categories. Sometimes it's the area they wanted to spend most of their time in. This is satisfaction. Other times, they spent their life in an area other than the one closest to their heart. This hurts. And then in choosing now which area you feel more drawn to, you can either A, spend more time in that area, or B, realize that the draw you feel, i.e., I really want to do this, but I think I should do that, is from programming other than your own. Now is a good time to reprogram yourself so that the goals you follow are your own. Margot Kaufman said, I once complained to my father that I didn't seem to be able to do the things the way other people did. Dad's advice? Margot, don't be a sheep. People hate sheep. They eat sheep. That's another episode. Please contact me at maggie_heart@outlook.com for all of your needs. Have a great night. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Bye, everybody.